You are Locked On Orioles, your daily podcast on the Baltimore Orioles, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Locked On Orioles, your place for Orioles news and analysis from the clubhouse to the warehouse and beyond. I'm your host, Justin McGuire. I'm the former Major League Baseball editor for Sporting News. I'm a former Cy Young and Rookie of the Year voter. I host another podcast. It's called Baseball by the Book, and I'm a lifelong Orioles fan. Today we're going to be talking about Sig Meidel, who was recently hired by the Orioles as Assistant General Manager for Analytics. He was hired by Mike Elias, who of course was recently named General Manager. Both of them come over from the Astros organization. So today we're going to talk to a guy who knows as much about the Astros organization and its rebuild as anybody out there. Our guest is Ben Reiter. He's a writer for Sports Illustrated, and over the summer he published a book called Astro Ball, which takes an in-depth look at how the Astros won the World Series in 2017, just a few years after being the worst team in baseball. We'll get to that in just a second.
Hey folks, just a reminder, for all the original content of the Locked On Podcast Network, both the podcasts and the written content on every team, go to LockedOnSports.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Locked On Orioles. We are joined now by Ben Reiter of Sports Illustrated. He is the author of Astro Ball, a book that came out this past summer. And I've said this on Twitter, and I've said it on the podcast, and I'll repeat it now before we talk to Ben. But this is a book that I think Orioles fans really should check out if you have any interest at all in how the rebuild might go in Baltimore. We know Mike Elias is the general manager. Sig Meidel has been hired, and we're going to talk about Sig a bit here, as the assistant general manager for analytics. And both of those guys play a prominent role in Astro Ball. And Astro Ball just gives you a good sense of how the Astros went about the rebuild and how, what role these guys might play in the Orioles rebuild. So I definitely suggest you check that out. Also check out episode 152 of my other podcast, Baseball by the Book, where Ben and I had an extensive conversation about the book. So with all that being said, Ben, welcome to the podcast. Let me just ask you about Sig Meidel, because he is going to play a key role in building up the Orioles analytics department. That's what we know about him so far. The headline thing about him that we see a lot is a former NASA engineer. So beyond that, though, what should fans know about him? Tell us a little bit about his background, how he got into baseball, and what kind of approach you think he might bring to analytics in Baltimore.
Right. Well, one thing that fans will get familiar with, Justin, is how to say his name. You got it. It's Meidel. It's a tough one. Most of the time, people in front offices generally refer to him as just Sig, and you know who you're talking about. Look, Sig is the type of person who had no position available to him in baseball until about 15 years ago, right? He was a brilliant, he had a brilliant mind for data. He got graduate degrees. He worked not only at NASA, he worked at Lockheed Martin, but all along he had a passion for baseball and for baseball data. He was a member of Sabre. An interesting fact that kind of brings on new relevance from Astro Ball is that when he was a kid, he'd play this game, All-Star Baseball. I don't know if you remember it. That was the one where you like get cards that represented each player, and you put the cards on a spinner, and you'd hit the spinner, and based on where your spinner ended up, that was kind of the result of the players at bat.
Right. Well, let me just interject there. I do remember it. I had that game and I loved it. The thing I remember about it is the background on the cardboard was Wrigley Field, and that was a really fun game. Pre video game. I'm old enough to have played that game in the like 70s and 80s. But yeah, it's a great game.
Yeah, so that's what like people who are interested in baseball numbers did back in the 70s and 80s, right? Before this explosion in availability of stats and stuff like that. Anyway, so like each card would be divided into 14 zones, and the outcomes would be differently sized based on a player's skill. Like a player who is a slap hitter would have a really big zone for a single and smaller one for strikeout. Anyway, his favorite players to play with back as a kid were Dan Brothers and Wee Willie Keeler, who of course were members of the Baltimore Orioles back in 1894. So in some ways, his arrival in Baltimore has some, I don't know, it's like some poetic justice to it. It's almost been faded. This was how his passion for baseball numbers began back when he was a kid. And now here we are 40 years later, and he's in charge of really ramping up an analytics department in Baltimore that, as far as I understand it, was basically the laggard in Major League Baseball as recently as last year. Every other team had ramped up their departments clearly over the past 15 years. The Astros had more than a dozen analysts working in their front office. The Orioles had many fewer than that, a handful at most. So really, this is his job. This is what Mike Elias, who knows him extremely well, of course, from their time not only in Houston, but the two worked together in St. Louis as well. So these two guys have worked together for a dozen years at this point. His job is to come in, build a modern analytics department, one that matches, even exceeds if possible, the one in Houston. And the real stroke of insight that led to Houston's success, and that I detail in depth in Astro Ball, which really is a good primer, by the way, as you mentioned, for Orioles fans who want to understand some of the concepts that they will put in place in Baltimore. The real stroke of genius is, yes, numbers are important. Yes, we need to be a data-driven organization, but data is more than like on-base percentage or performance stats. There's a lot more you can quantify from the world of analyzing players and predicting their future performances, even getting into things like their makeup, their character, their mechanics, their health, trying to combine all sources of information, hard and soft, to serve as a guide for the organization's decisions. That's really the overall goal of what Sig and Mike are going to do in Baltimore.
Now, I don't know that you have any special insight into this, but one of the things I was interested about was Sig Meidel announced that he was leaving the Astros organization even before Mike Elias was hired by the Orioles. And I saw an interview with Sig. I'll just keep saying Sig because I don't want to mispronounce his last name. But I saw an interview with Sig just this morning from Rock Kabatko of Mass and Sports, who did a quick interview, a quick Q&A with Sig, and he asked him about why he left the Astros organization because, again, it was before Elias was even hired. Why do you think he left? Obviously, he was very successful there. The organization was very successful. But he made this decision to leave without having another job. Why do you think he did that?
You know, I think that, first of all, he did not leave Houston with any hard feelings whatsoever. Jeff Luhnow was the guy who hired him in St. Louis back in 2005, gave him his dream job in baseball, and it's really continued to be that way for Sig all the way since then. I think that he's somebody whose fire is lit, so to speak, by the building process, by the education process, by turning something that was really not much of anything into a success. The startup phase, if you will, clearly in Houston, they had moved beyond the startup phase. They moved more to a maintenance phase, or to keeping the ball in the air. That doesn't mean there's not more innovation to do. There certainly is, but it's more marginal. I think that he was kind of longing for a situation in which you could build something from scratch again. And my understanding is that's what he was looking for. Clearly, it worked out pretty well as he ended up with a team that in some ways is in even worse shape than the disasters were when he and Luhnow got there in 2012.
Yeah, like I was going to say, if he's looking for somewhere to start from the bottom, did he find the right place. Because the Orioles lost 115 games this past season, as everyone knows, and the farm system is not highly regarded. I think it's a little bit better than it was a year ago because they did add a little bit of quantity to it with the trades they made over the summer, but still not one of the top farm systems. We know the Orioles have pretty much ignored the international market for the past, 10, 15 years, and that's had disastrous consequences at the major league level. So yeah, this is an organization where if you want to build something from scratch, there's probably no better organization in baseball right now than the Orioles. So he and Mike Elias have their work cut out for them. But if that's the challenge that they love, they're going to have a good time in Baltimore. That's for sure.
They do. One thing that they say is when you're a member of the Astros, you have to buy every orange tie that you see in a department store ever to wear for official occasions. So I think they're both pleased. They're going to be able to keep keep using that collection in Baltimore.
Right. Now, his position with the Orioles is assistant general manager analytics. Is that a higher position than he had in Houston, or is it comparable? Do you know, like, what would you say in terms of where he is on the organizational chart?
I mean, I'd consider it a promotion technically. Clearly, he had a very special direct relationship with Jeff Luhnow, and his voice was important within the Astros. But, you know, at first he was director of decision sciences, which is this kind of title that Luhnow bestowed upon him when they got there that a lot of outsiders mocked, although it actually turned out to be a very good descriptor of what he was doing. And then he became, you know, special assistant process improvement. So he had not reached the assistant GM level in Houston. I think it's safe to say that this is the highest executive level that Sig has reached so far.
Now, one of the things that's interesting about him, in addition to his background as a, you know, an engineer with NASA, like I said, that's something that I think has been in every headline about him since he's been hired. But
sure.
In addition to that, he obviously has an extensive history in baseball now with both the Cardinals and Astros, going back to, I think, 2005, I think, was when he was first hired by the Cardinals. So he's been in baseball for a while now. But one of the things that's really interesting about him, that you wrote about it in Astro Ball, he spent some time in uniform with in the Astros minor league system. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
So this began during 2017, actually, when he spent several weeks, maybe a bit longer than that, even in their short season A-ball affiliate in Troy, New York, the Tri-City Valley Cats. And it continued, actually, last year, in which he dropped in on for about a week and a half at a time on five of the different affiliates up and down the Astros system. And this is what they mean by change. Well, this is what they hoped for when they changed his title to process improvement. Kind of his new task was not sitting in the nerd cave, which is what they called their offices in which the analysts sat in Houston. It wasn't sitting there and merely kind of from a distance coming up with predictions for how players might perform in the future, which is something they obviously did exceedingly well. It was getting out on the field, and it was observing how kind of data was being integrated at all levels of the organization, specifically as far as how it was being used to help players improve and how it was being embraced, and also making suggestions to managers and coaches and players as to how they might do this. You know, like Jim Crane, the owner of the Astros, I should say, has made investments in technology up and down the system to help players kind of maximize their potential, really, to get the most out of themselves. These are things like Rapsodo machines that can read the spin rate instantly of every pitch a pitcher throws, and high-definition, high-speed cameras that can zoom in on a pitcher's fingers when he releases a ball so you can see exactly how his hand is behaving, how his wrist is behaving on every throw. So Sig is there to help them see, look, like, this is what the data suggests is your best pitch. This is how your wrist looks like when you throw it. Like, how might you incrementally introduce training techniques that will allow you to replicate these best versions of your pitches each and every time? Like, that was kind of the blending of man and machine that the Astros are so good at. And they're still focused on player acquisition, talent ID, as they call it. But increasingly over the past several years, they have focused on using technology and data as almost a performance enhancer, right? Not as far as picking the players, but as far as making the players they picked better. So that in the later years, that was a big part of Sig's focus. And I'm sure that's a big part of what he'll be doing, or at least the systems he'll be installing in Baltimore to help struggling Orioles, you know, like Chris Davis, figure out what might be going wrong and how they might use data and technology and incorporate it into their training to improve.
Yeah, if he can improve Chris Davis, he deserves every award that's out there in base, because I think the guy might be beyond improving at this point in his career. But we'll see, and it'll be interesting.
Well, you never know. You really don't. You know, you look at a lot of the pitchers that the Astros brought on who are considered to be, you know, washed up or maybe never made it or kind of beyond improvement, and that turned out not to be the case.
Yeah, that will be really interesting in the Orioles organization, because the one thing that's been constant for the last, you know, 25 years with the Orioles is an inability to develop major league quality pitchers. They just have had very few they've developed since Mike Mussina, really. He was the last really top of the rotation kind of guy that they developed who actually pitched well for the Orioles. I mean, obviously, Jake Arrieta went on to have success elsewhere, and some of the guys like Zach Britton had success in the bullpen, but they haven't really developed many successful starting pitchers. So it'll be very interesting to see if that starts changing as we take these more analytical approach, at the minor league level and everywhere else. That will be kind of, I think, very telling if suddenly the Orioles start producing successful pitchers.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if that actually happens fairly quickly. These guys know what they're doing. And one thing I'll say, I know we're mostly talking about Stig, but, when Mike Elias was on the job, well, he wasn't on the job market, but when his name was being suggested as being a candidate for a lot of the open GM positions, he was always painted as an analytics guy. And yes, the Astros are a data-driven front office. He has a great command of analytics. But Mike Elias came up as a scout. Like, yeah, he went to Yale, but he spent the next 5 years after college on the road in the mid-Atlantic region, down in Florida, down in Puerto Rico, and the Dominican, as an old school scout. So he's really somebody who blends both sides of the equation. He's not just coming armed with a boatload of algorithms or anything like that.
And that's such a key thing too, because as I already mentioned, and I'm sure you know this, but the one thing the Orioles, well, not the one thing, but one of the negative things about the Orioles in recent years has been their complete, I guess, lack of interest almost in the international market. They've hardly been a player at all. Mm-hmm. There were signs there that had changed even before these hirings. They got some, they traded for some international slot money over the regular season. Dan Duquette said that they were going to really start being a player in it. But I think the fact that they hired Mike Elias is an indication that the ownership is taking the international market more seriously, wouldn't you say?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and that's a big, the Astros did very well in the international market, obviously, over the past few years. You look at some of their top prospects, like Yordan Alvarez, who's their third prospect, Cionel Perez. Obviously, they made the bigger signing of Yuli Gurriel from the international market. The Astros really ramped up their efforts there. Elias is running the international scouting department as well as the domestic scouting department. By the end of his tenure in Houston, no doubt that's going to be one of, well, his many top priorities.
Yeah, I guess I think it's pretty clear from this conversation and from, your feelings about how the Astros went about the rebuild, but this was a home run for the Orioles, both in terms of Mike Elias and Sig, right? I mean, this was, they couldn't have done better in terms of facing a rebuild in terms of who they brought in.
I would say so. I mean, I thought ever since that job opened up that Elias was precisely the guy to do it, not only because of his command of scouting and analytics, because, look, he's done it before. He was there from the beginning of the rebuild in Houston. You can't do it the exact same way. Obviously, we're 5-6 years later now. Technologies have changed. A lot of other teams have caught up, actually. So kind of the advantages and some of the techniques the Astros are using back in 12, 13, 14 aren't quite there anymore. But if there's anyone who's a forward thinker and can get things in line and rebuild a team, even if it takes, 5 or 6 years, Elias is certainly the guy to look.
Yeah, that's the other thing I was going to ask you. I mean, obviously, one of the things that the Baltimore reporters have been asking both of these guys is a time frame, and both of them are basically refusing to commit to it. I mean, realistically, what kind of time frame do you think the Orioles will be looking at with these guys in charge in terms of just getting back to to a point where they're competitive?
Well, we at SI certainly have no plans to put them on the cover predicting a World Series title for them,
right,
as we did for the Astros. We're probably not going to do that again. Look, frankly, I'd think that the timeline might be a little longer than it was in Houston for a couple reasons. Okay, so they got to Houston really at the beginning of the 2012 season. Terrible 12, terrible 13, slightly less terrible 14, and then by 15, they surprised everybody, including us at SI, by making the playoffs, making the ALDS, and then of course 2 years later, it all came together in a big way. Baltimore, I think it might take a little bit of longer for a few reasons. One, kind of the more competitive atmosphere as far as analytical sophistication around the league. Two, you can never overlook the division, as you guys know well, in Baltimore. The AL West is not the same as the AL East. You've got the Yankees and Red Sox are not going to go anywhere anytime soon, so you have to contend with them. Three is probably payroll. You know, Houston didn't spend any money whatsoever in those first years. They always had the capacity to ramp it up pretty significantly as the fourth largest market in the country. Not saying that Baltimore is poor and doesn't have financial resources, but they might not have the top end kind of resources when they're ready to win to bring in those big free agents. That doesn't mean that I don't think they'll be competitive again. Obviously, this team was extremely competitive between 2012 and 2016 with a lot of those same factors in place. But I'd be looking, you know, if this thing isn't looking a heck of a lot better by 2023 or something, then it might be time to worry. That doesn't mean it won't be fun to watch the ride. You know, you kind of get attached to young players, even if they're not winning quite yet, as Astros fans did with Altuve and Keuchel and Springer and Correa. But as far as actually contending, 22-23, I think, would probably be the timeline.
Yeah, and that's a good point you just make there, that it's and I've said this before on the podcast, and anybody who will listen to me when I'm talking about the Orioles, which a team I've been following for 40 years, you know, I've seen a lot of bad Orioles teams over the years, and I'm expecting to see a lot of bad Orioles teams over the next few years, but it's a whole lot different to watch a bad team knowing that they have a goal in mind, that they're working towards that goal, that there's an end point kind of in mind, then there's just a bad team that's sort of flailing and making it up as they go every year, which is what the Orioles did a lot between, say, like 1998 and 2011, when they were, you know, every year they finished below 500. That was between their you know, playoff appearances in 97 and 2012. It was every year was a different thing. Every year was a different manager. It was always just like, you know, this year we're going to sign some free agents. This year we're not going to do anything. And there never seemed to be any kind of a clear plan in place. And that seems to be the thing that's going to be different under these guys if the ownership really lets them do their thing, is that even with the bad teams, we know that they're working towards something.
That's right. And you know that it has worked, which is a difference also from what was happening in Houston. Because when they were doing this, you know, there was no track record, really. There was a lot of faith. And, of course, a lot of Astros fans had no faith in what the front office was doing. Now you know you have guys at the top who do have a plan that can work, and it's something to believe in. I will say, and Elias has said this, I'd encourage everybody to read his Reddit Ask Me Everything, or Ask Me Anything, I should say, that he did last week. Look, they have the 1-1 this year, right? I mean, they earned it, as everybody knows, with 115 losses, but they have the top pick in the draft. There's a lot of parallels between this year and 2012, when the Astros had their first of three straight top picks, due in large measure to Elias's scouting and urging. They shocked the baseball world by making a very surprising pick that year, Carlos Correa, who became really the centerpiece and the cornerstone of this team as it lifted itself from the cellar. I know for a fact that Elias is going to be looking to make a pick like that. And it's a very important pick with the top overall pick this year. You know, Bobby Witt Jr., the Texas shortstop, seems like somebody that they might turn to and might be, you know, the Orioles version of Carlos Correa.
And yeah, the other thing that I've mentioned this on the podcast a few times is there's a really good chance the Orioles are going to have the number one overall pick the following year as well, because this team is going to be really bad again in 2019. This is a team that was horrible last year with Manny Machado for half the season, right? And with Jonathan Scope and Kevin Gausman. They're going into this year without those real major league players, and they're going to be relying a lot on, you know, basically AAA players, you know, retreads, people who, you know, has-beens and never were. This is a team that easily could lose, you know, in that range, 110 games again, and have that number one overall pick. And why that's going to be painful to 2019, if you can stockpile those number one picks, the talent level goes up real quick.
Yeah, that's right. And of course, the interesting thing is the Astros didn't nail all of their number one picks by any means, right? I mean, they nailed Correa. Then their second one, they picked Mark Appel, who didn't work out. And then the third one, they picked Brady Aiken, who they didn't even end up signing, the high school pitcher. Although, of course, with the compensatory pick they received for not signing him, they took Alex Bregman the next year. So that one worked out very well. I guess what I would say is Orioles fans should not look for even this very intelligent, forward-thinking front office to make every decision correctly. They certainly didn't in Houston. It's impossible to be perfect. What they're trying to do is make marginally more correct decisions than their competition. That's what their system is designed to do, and I think that that's a fair expectation.
All right. Well, Ben, thank you so much for joining us today. Again, I encourage Orioles fans to go out and read Astro Ball. Ask for it for Christmas or Hanukkah or whatever holiday you celebrate. It's a great read. It was a book that I enjoyed a lot even before I knew that it was going to be relevant to the Orioles. And if you're interested just in the modern game of baseball, it really tells you a lot about how front offices operate in 2018. So anyway, I'd recommend that highly. And Ben, thanks a lot for being here.
Hey, man. Thanks, Jesse.
And that's going to do it for another edition of Locked On Orioles. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.